5 minutes ago.
Just whatever the meeting is.
Okay. It's 7:05. I'll, in the absence of our chair, as the vice chair, I'll call the meeting to order. Our first item on our docket is the public comment period, not to exceed 15 minutes. I don't see any members of the public present, so I'm gonna assume that there is no one here for the public comment period. The next thing I wanted to do was ask Aaliyah.
Yes.
To introduce yourself. We have a new member of the Transportation Commission, and if you would introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself, welcome, and we're excited to have you.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here as well. My name is Aaliyah Gaskins, and I live in Cameron Station with my husband and our beagle. My background is in public health, although I'm also finishing up my master's in urban planning. During the day, I work for, it's called the Center for Community Investment, which is an initiative of the Lincoln Institute for Land Policy. And we work with communities across the country to help them better attract and deploy capital for things like transit-oriented development, affordable housing, development of regional food systems. So before that, I was at the National League of Cities, did a lot of work with city governments on things like complete streets and Vision Zero policies. I think I was interested in this commission because I thought it would be a great way to combine sort of my background in planning, public health, and municipal finance.
Terrific. You sound very qualified to help us out around this table.
Looking forward to it.
Super exciting. I also wanted, before we move on to, well, I guess we can't do minutes yet, but I wanted to draw the commission's attention to the fact that staff provided us an updated Transportation Commission work plan. So at our last meeting, we had a nice discussion about this, the original plan that staff provided. We gave them feedback. We talked about various things we thought would be good objectives for the year, and so we have a nice little updated reference sheet there. It's not an item on the agenda, but it is there for us as a tool. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is updates to receive on consent. Does anyone have anything specific they want to hear from staff from the consent agenda? I have a couple questions on a couple consent items, but I don't require presentations on the consent items. So if you would humor me, I'll go through my questions. So the Smart Scale funding efforts, do you have a sense, sorry, let me just flip to the reference here. Smart Scale. So, during the last round, we received a total of $33.7 million for 4 projects. That sounds like a lot of money, but can you give me a sense of how we stack up in terms of what we ask for and what we get, and that sort of success percentage compared to other jurisdictions applying for these Smart Scale funds?
Compared to other jurisdictions, no, I could pull some numbers together. Doing like Northern Virginia jurisdictions, because it's a statewide program, we can pull some information together about that.
Yeah, I mean, nothing fancy. I'm just curious how this, so it feels like a lot, but it's also nice. It's nice to be able to explain to someone if we're talking about how we get our money,
right,
what we go out for, what kinds of things we ask for, and what we tend to expect back. I'm just curious how that, both how that lays out for our own expectations when we apply for something, roughly how much do we get out of what we apply for, and then how relatively successful are we in our applications compared to other jurisdictions?
We've been pretty successful with this. Like speaking directly from the last round, we submitted 5 projects. The 5th project was funding for construction of the multimodal bridge. That one was rejected by the state, but the other 4 projects, I believe, were completely funded what we asked for.
Awesome.
So 100%.
Okay.
For this pot of money going forward, we're not sure exactly how much money is going to be available in the 24-25 time frame, but the one thing that is different this time around is we're capped at 4 projects. Dash is eligible to submit projects. They're able to do up to four, and the city is able to do up to four. So there are caps. That's one of the biggest changes from last time around.
Okay. So the city's submissions and Dash's submissions are separate?
Basically, yeah. I mean, their eligibility is separate, but they'll flow through the same process. We'll bring all of the projects, both Dash and city projects, to the Transportation Commission. We'll take the Dash projects to the ATC board, and then all of which will eventually go to City Council.
Cool. Okay.
Alan, if I may, I would like to, just for my own purposes, like, is the state looking for a specific type of project that they want to fund? I mean, what was kind of like the reason why they rejected the multimodal bridge versus other projects that we know that were successful in terms of funding for non-motorized transportation and other improvements in the network?
So the reason the multimodal bridge was rejected is basically what the state sees Smart Scale as is a program that leverages other funds, not supplanting, but leveraging other funds and projects. You kind of need that last pot of funding to put it over the top. Basically, the estimated cost of the bridge could be anywhere from $50 to $80 million. And right now, our CIP has $500,000 in it. So you're nowhere near ready for this yet.
Yeah.
And we got a lot of very good feedback from the state on the last process, even after everything was closed out, which I think we'll definitely put to use as we move forward with the next batch of projects and whittling them down. But to your point about the type of projects, TDM is eligible, transit capacity expansion, highway capacity expansion. Highway means more than just roadways. That includes actually like signalization improvements, capacity improvements at intersections, and intersection efficiencies, things like that. So don't take it too literally as meaning highway. And the other one is bike and pedestrian facilities. So last time around, we had two transit projects, a technology project, and a trail project. So we had a pretty... That's usually generally been our approach, is to have kind of a pretty broad multimodal approach to the application, so you're not going all in one place.
Thank you. On consent item B, the I-395 corridor transportation management plan process.
Mm-hmm.
My questions here are just a little more sort of to give me a sense of how this executes, because the I-395 and for that matter the 66, like these regional corridors with HOT and how we use TDM and how we use other kinds of things, funding for transit for higher capacity vehicles on these routes. It's very much a regional thing. So can you talk just a little bit about who's doing the employer outreach, and how we know what they're doing, and how we as Alexandria in particular are sort of supervising and seeing that. In particular, I noted like it says at least 16 hours a week will be dedicated to City of Alexandria employers, and I'm wondering how we know that's happening.
First of all, big picture for folks, basically this TMP, the Transportation Management Plan, this is just for the construction period. There's other funding that will be available once the lanes are active and generating revenue. This is strictly during the construction period. The funding is provided by VDOT, and DRPT is coordinating the effort. Basically, we're in the process of putting together an agreement with DRPT, which lays out what resources they have. That's where the 16 hours come from.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're committing to provide dedicated to the City of Alexandria. So they're going to have a person that I believe works part-time or full-time supporting the jurisdictions along the corridor, which is Alexandria, Arlington, and Fairfax County.
This is a full-time VDOT person.
Or yes, correct. Okay. They're a contractor. They're this contractor they've hired, and that person will work with our TDM program, our Go Alex team. They've already met with them and talked to DRPT about this, which is how we're developing the kind of memorandum of agreement, basically. But they're completely funding it 100%. There's no city dollars involved. They're paying for it, so it's a resource we're able to take advantage of. and they'll be working closely with our, like I said, our Go Alex team and our employer outreach contact we have for the city. They'll work on that, and they are required as part of the agreement, even with VDOT and DRPT, to provide, you know, regular reports. There are, in the agreement, it lays out, I think it's one meeting a week with city staff during the ramp-up period, then once you get going, moving into, like, monthly meetings, coordination, and they're required to provide a report, I think, quarterly to the state, what they've done, the activities, who they've reached out to, met different performance measures that are going to be in there. They're in the contract between the state and the contractor providing the service. So we're benefiting from the service without the administrative side of operating the contract. So we're basically getting the labor from it and the support.
Great.
Do you have a sense, I know you mentioned this is just for the construction period, mm-hmm. but I guess I'm curious about sort of what's the current take up of the program and like how many more people this could bring on or what the impact could be from this particular amount?
Do you mean engaging employers along the corridor or how we're leveraging?
Yes.
Okay.
More so the second
part. Okay. We have, as part of the TDM program, an employer outreach person who works for the city. Actually works with a contractor for the city. Basically, her role is basically to engage with employers across the entire city. It's cold calling, it's meeting and going to different events that major employers have. We spend a lot of time at PTO, Mark mm-hmm. Center, now NSF. There's outreach to smaller employers, the whole gamut of employers across the city. What this will do will basically focus on within a mile of the corridor. So basically, it gives basically 16 extra hours of work trying to reach out to those employers along that corridor within that mile. Basically, what they're trying to do is they're basically trying to educate people about what options there are during the construction period, telework, carpooling, van pooling. The state's also paying for additional trips on the 21A and 21D. Those are metro bus routes that run along the corridor. They're subsidizing the additional trips during the construction period only. And then basically trying to get the word out that this is happening. These are the resources. Talk to Go Alex, talk to the employer outreach folks in order to kind of get the word out there.
Thank you.
So we're just on consent and I'm asking. The last set of questions I have, we have an item, an update item on consent that's about the work you're doing to update your maintenance of traffic requirements. Mm-hmm. This is really cool. It's mm-hmm. kind of like nerdy cool, I think. But in fact, before working in this area, I didn't know what an MOT was. But now that I know what it is and I've seen it in action, I'm really excited that you are working to make it more multimodal and to really acknowledge that when there are big construction projects, it can destroy the network for all of the people and not just the cars. So for the sake of our listening audience / anyone else in the room who might be less familiar, can you talk a little bit about what an MOT is, how it's used? In particular, I'm interested in maybe an anecdotal look at the Eden site as an active construction site right now and how it might be operating differently if new requirements were in place.
And if I can add to that, I think your question will answer my questions, but if you could put it in context of what's here now, is there any mm-hmm. MOTs now or things that they're working on, or if this is totally new for the city? I was just kind of curious like what the starting point is.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. So first off, MOT stands for Maintenance of Traffic. It's the plan to get people around construction sites. and so currently the city is using I forget the exact name of it, but it's the 2011 VDOT guidance on maintenance of traffic around construction sites, which takes pedestrians and bicycle safety into account insofar as that it gives guidance on rerouting pedestrian paths, how to close sidewalks effectively. Etc. So what this proposal is doing, and I'll tell you kind of where we are with it in a minute, but what this does is or what this has led to is that like entire blocks of sidewalks are closed off for, you know, 2 or 3 years, for example. So, you know, pedestrians have to cross the street 2 or 3 times just to get to where they want to go. Have to totally reroute their plans, or people just walk in the street. You know, I think the best example is right across the street here on Fairfax, next to Dolce Gelato, where they blocked the sidewalk off for 8-10 months, and for a while people were just walking in the streets because they didn't want to cross the street at the crosswalk, or then walk up and then cross back if they're going to the Carlisle House from King Street, for example. And there's not that much traffic on Fairfax to begin with. So what this is doing is then saying we're actually prioritizing a 2016 VDOT manual to provide for safe pedestrian and bicycle access around construction sites. It's similar to what DDOT and DC has done, but it essentially prioritizes keeping some pedestrian access open along the site. So, for example, in the parking lane, instead of allowing the contractors to put up the sign that says sidewalk closed in the middle of the block or something. So first off, that's one of the action items in Vision Zero is to finalize this policy. And second, it's all in the vein of our complete streets work as well, just making it easier to walk around the network in a city. It's kind of a very urban thing that we like to promote. And so we have we're finalizing kind of the details of it with our own permitting staff. Katie North presented it to NAOP this morning. It's the regional body of local developers body, a body of developers and developer attorneys and traffic transportation impact firms. That do those studies, and so they have about two weeks to give comments on the draft memo to industry, and then after that we will send the memo to industry out to the industry.
Cool. Mm-hmm. So certain, when you mentioned the 2 to 3 years, is there a trigger of when they have to start considering like how big the project is or how long sidewalks would be closed that might trigger?
Yeah, so currently the draft is if a project proposes to close a sidewalk for more than 7 days.
Oh, more than 7 days, okay.
Yeah. And I think which is actually more progressive than DC, which is 30 days.
Nice. Yeah, I was recently several times walking near the Eden's construction site, and I was a bit surprised because the entire block of Montgomery along the side of the site is taken up by the construction, with the exception of about 3 feet of pedestrian space on the far side of the road, and even their construction equipment and materials are stored on the far side of the road sidewalk. Mm-hmm. So there's no bicycle access, there's no car access.
Yeah.
There's no, I'm not even sure if there's really like wheelchair access through that whole length.
Yeah.
So I was pretty surprised to see that, because I'm not used to a construction site getting quite so much right of way for their stuff, but maybe it was consolidated, maybe it was something that allowed them to put everything on one side and not clutter up other roads. I don't know.
I should say the Eden's project, that is a special case, because they're also, while they're tearing up the road, they're also doing some water main work.
Okay.
So they're actually in network saving the city $1 million.
Okay. So it's about the limits of disturbance being so big for them because they're actually doing the work further out.
Right, yeah. So that
I guess that's an exceptional case.
Yes.
Is there a plan for the enforcement part, or making sure that there's someone signing off to make sure they're following the construction? Is it just part of the original plan? And then I'm curious how these get implemented at the time of construction.
Yeah, so we've also been learning a lot about the process. essentially, there is a maintenance of traffic plan that's brought to permitting everything else is being permitted. But it's technically for information only, because things change from day to day on construction sites, and so. But generally, the idea is that if they start with a maintenance of traffic plan that provides a safe pedestrian passage around a construction site, that it will generally be adhered to. And then we also have inspectors that go around and inspect for a lot of things. So this, we're just adding this to the list.
This is not a development condition that they prepare a maintenance of traffic plan. Is it?
I feel like it's one of the conditions that's written in at the end of a DSUP.
Okay.
I don't remember, actually.
Yeah, I don't know either. I feel like I might have seen it before, but I could be wrong.
I did have a question. You said that there's a draft of the new guidance, of these new requirements available. Is it possible for us to see this?
I'll check. I'm not sure how public it is, but I'll check. And okay.
Or when it becomes available, if it's not public right away, I guess at some point it will be.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. Yeah, it'd be good if maybe we could offer comments on it, mm-hmm. Since it is in our purview.
Mm-hmm.
And just out of curiosity, for the ones that are less than 7 days, is there any rules that they have to follow at this point? Just, you know, what was already in place? I have an Arlington example just this past week where I was just riding my bike, and then they put the signs to warn the cars that construction was ahead. But it's like I almost went into, I mean, the sign's obviously big, but I mean, it totally blocked. So I had to jump out of the bike lane into very busy traffic in a very awkward way. I'm like, why didn't they just put the sign on the grass where the other signs were? But it's like they didn't realize they were using the bike lane. I'm thinking of small things they can do on a small site, something temporary that sometimes I feel like they don't realize how they're impacting the bikers or the walkers.
Mm-hmm.
Sidewalk wasn't exactly closed. It just was blocked temporarily with a sign.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was really awkward for a cyclist anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just kind of curious what's in place for
kind of the smaller scale mm-hmm. projects. Well, nothing right now. I mean, it kind of reverts to that 2011
document.
And part of the reason was so that it wouldn't put kind of undue burden on like window washers or painters that are just there for a couple days or like lawn care firms or anything like that.
You mentioned that one of the models you looked at was DC. I'm just curious, in sort of your conversations with them or looking at their models, what have been their biggest challenges to implementing this?
I think it's mostly been with their permitting staff and their willingness to write tickets. I think that's been the big one.
Enforcement.
Yeah, that's been a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
That's it for my questions on the consent.
Okay. Thank you.
So we're done with item 3?
Yeah, we have to go back to minutes because we were waiting for a quorum.
Well, going back to the minutes, has everyone had an opportunity to review the minutes for accuracy? And if there are no changes, do I have a motion to accept as presented?
I'll make a motion to accept the minutes.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Thank you. I'd like to thank the Vice Chair for getting the meeting started for me. I appreciate it very much. I'm running a little late today. And before we start the Commission updates, have we introduced our most recent addition? Okay, thank you. I wanted to make sure that we took care of that. Well, welcome, Commissioner Gaskins.
Thank you.
And we shall have one other vacancy, and that's in the process of being filled, I'm assuming?
That's correct.
Okay, and hopefully in the not too distant future, we'll have a full table. Great, thank you. I think I went to my right yesterday, so I'll go to my left this time. Yesterday, last meeting, so I'll go to my left.
Vice Chair? Updates?
Yeah, for any commission update?
I don't think I have any updates.
Okay,
I'm
good.
I passed, too.
You passed. Whoa.
Okay, I've got one, actually. I announced this at our last meeting. The Eisenhower West Landmark Van Dorn Implementation Advisory Group met Monday. And it was an interesting meeting. There's something actually rather kind of intriguing that came up during the meeting. As I may have said before, the city's been in kind of long-term talks with Norfolk Southern about the multimodal bridge that was discussed earlier in the meeting. And, there are various ideas thrown around, the original layout to kind of start in Cameron Station and so on. But now, after further discussion, Norfolk Southern has actually given their preferred alignment for the bridge, where they would like to start and end. And it kind of, the positioning of the bridge will be, it'll begin a little further west, kind of on the western edge of what is the Madeira Temple right now, right about there, between Nick's Nick's nightclub and like the body shops and the Mercedes place right next to it, kind of right in that spot. That's where it would begin. And their one proposal suggested, you know, because it'll basically avoid the transloading facility they have there. So they don't want to be going over that, and they have a building there and so on. So this is kind of what they showed us. And they proposed a curb at the end of it leading towards what would be the straightened Eisenhower Avenue. As you may know, part of the plan is to straighten Eisenhower Avenue, end it at Metro Road, and have kind of another road leading to Van Dorn instead of having the continuous thing. Now, this change in the brick position does kind of complicate that and might change that plan, mainly because with the way the bridge is positioned now, like kind of where it starts and sort of where it's going to end, either it's going to make that curve or it's going to be straight. The city, as far as I understand, is leading towards like the straightened version of the bridge, because making the curve will slow traffic down, it'll be complicated and kind of, it'll be more engineering. So the city doesn't know exactly how it's going to handle that yet. Because, you know, that was a big part of the plan and the street grid, you know, that was part of the street grid as originally proposed in all the efforts up to this point. So my impression was that the city didn't know how it was going to react just yet. It liked it didn't mind the counter proposal, and it kind of suggested straightening at the end and meeting Eisenhower just past the UPS facility right now. It'll go over the parking lot, which will no longer exist, and kind of end right there, right by where the UPS is now. So kind of Eisenhower may remain the way it is, and obviously that'll take some adjustments for the rest of the grid out there. However, like I said, the city doesn't know what it's going to do about that just yet. But that's the one fairly significant thing that's come out of the last meeting, because that's kind of, different from what we had talked about over however many years now. So yeah, I'll keep the commission updated as this progresses. That's about it.
Why does the railroad care?
They have a loading facility there where they load ethanol and other stuff onto trucks. And they don't want, you know, it's their property, obviously, and they don't want the bridge going over some of that facility. And that is fundamentally their reason.
It's not a clearance issue with the tracks or anything like that.
I do not believe so, no.
It's actually Pierce placing the property that they are talking to staff about it.
And not that I'm no longer recused from Norfolk Southern activities, given my new employer. The Norfolk Southern has a very unique business model, and the Norfolk Southern is very driven in what they do, and they want complete flexibility in the properties that they own and operate, and that will provide them with the ability to expand, contract, adjust based on the needs of the service and the new types of equipment that are unanticipated yet, both from height and their ability to do also transloading at that facility. And if it's in their business plan, Congress has a hard time trying to do it. They're looking through that now. There are no cases. So they're not the easiest group to deal with. Welcome.
Hello, everyone.
And I'm sure Oscar could relate to that. He's his VRE experience.
The key word is their property.
Their property.
Their property.
Yes, but they're a driven organization.
Can do nothing about it. Enough.
Anything to add?
Yes. Well, for the commission update for Environmental Policy Commission, sure. Just more updates on some upcoming meetings, and then we had our winter retreat on February 3rd. It was a Saturday. It was a portion of a day. It was pretty exciting. We had the, I thought it was exciting anyway. We had a really good turnout. Melissa came. That was great. There wasn't a whole lot specifically about transportation because of what is one of the chapters that we're updating right away. But it came up a couple times, especially when we were talking about the electric vehicles. Electric buses were discussed. And we also talked about how climate in particular we talked about, but energy as well, that these are two of the chapters that really might not be a base for the whole the whole update, and so how those were overlap with the other sectors, including transportation. So I think those are could be opportunities to include some short-term goals, or at least making sure that they're consistent with, and when we are doing transportation or some of the other chapters like green building, which is one of the chapters I'll be working on, is then we're actually considering how it can contribute to climate change or energy savings. So that's it. Then we did have an electric bus come and give us a little ride around town afterwards, which was really awesome. That they had the demo that week was starting, and they kicked it off that Saturday with giving us a little ride around Old Town. So that was really cool. And then after, we'll have an Eco City. I haven't heard too much, but we're having a meeting on next week. We're having an Eco City Cafe to go to the public and have. We're thinking we're going to have stations. We're still working out the logistics. I think it's going to be up at the Masonic Temple area. And then the public would have opportunities to really discuss this with smaller team, you know, smaller groups of people. Where the meeting we just had was really great, but we only had 50 minutes. We had, like, cut off the discussion, and you could tell we could have a whole day meeting on each one of the subjects. So we're hoping that gives us a little bit more information. And then we also have a planning and zoning meeting together on March 22nd, which is a Thursday in the evening, 7 to 9. And these are going to go on the calendar, so and if anyone has questions, you're welcome to email me, and I can get you more information. But just wanted to get it on your radar. And Melissa, do you have anything you want to add about your attending the meeting? Is there anything that transportation-related that you can think of that would be worth?
You hit on it. I thought it was an important observation that the climate change mm-hmm. and energy concepts mm-hmm. might be an underpinning of the whole plan, mm-hmm. whereas the way you have it laid out in work program style is treating them like chapters.
Yes.
But I basically support to the extent that you can kind of pull that out and create
yeah.
it as a like foundation. It's really... The industry areas where impacts are created mm-hmm. are the way that you can target change, so strategies. But your goals can be distilled to different kinds of things. I would also put air quality in there as a potential distillation. It's not its own chapter in terms of strategies because you'll have
yeah.
different ways you hit on it. But
that's a good point.
Air
that
quality
one didn't
is,
come up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and it's different
in
than greenhouse
way.
Gases, and it's
yeah.
different than, I mean, that's about people's health.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and so, but there are, whether it's green building, transportation, or other kinds of things, they can all touch on air
they
quality.
They really can,
so,
yeah.
So how you structure the document is going to be really important, I think, for usability
yeah.
and simplification.
And interestingly, it's been months getting to the point that we're at now, just with the structuring, and it's really a continuation of how it was before, but they were still trying not to bite off more than they can chew, yet push the envelope on what they're trying to push the city to do, but they really want to be realistic as
yeah.
well.
Yeah.
But I think everyone seemed to be in agreement at that meeting of, yeah, let's reconsider the structure of it so we can look at climate and energy. And I will bring up the air quality. I think that's a good point, that one would fit very nicely in that way. And that's it for me.
And then the Councilman Chapman has had a chance to settle in. Anything for the share with the group?
Sure. Last night we had our first taste of the budget. and so we started to look at that. And of course, as you all know, we've got several months of discussion about several different pieces of the budget and where we go, not only operating but also capital improvements. I just wanted to highlight a couple things that came up from staff as related to this budget. The city manager has proposed fully implementing Vision Zero, and he wanted to do that in several different ways. One of the couple of things that he mentioned was looking at adding about 6 police officers specifically for traffic safety, and there's already some discussion within conversations with council members about where those could actually be housed. If they're really specifically for traffic safety, do they need to stay under APD, or is there a possibility they could go to another department to kind of serve out as support in another way? I think we'll see how that conversation goes and where that goes and what that actually looks like in real life, not just on paper. As part of the Vision Zero conversation, I think we all recall that we wanted to expand kind of the educational opportunities, working with some of the community partners, and so the city manager is requesting some funds to be able to do that as we start to align who those partners are and how they can contribute to that whole conversation. We're also going to be looking to make the appropriate capital investment in making actually this streetscape safer. When Hillary presented that, that was a major part of that conversation. Not only kind of what we can do as it relates to people, but actually infrastructure as well. And then I actually saw Jan when I was walking up here talking about our aggressive street paving plan. I would be surprised if there's a couple council members, including myself, who kind of see what the real max is that we can do. If there's other opportunities, he likes to caution us when we ask for tons of money for street paving about some of the other things that go into that, but that's part of the conversation and the budget conversation as well. A couple things that he mentioned, or the city manager mentioned, as it related to Dash specifically. We're going to try to maintain services, and I think one of the ways Dash is going to try to do that is by making a small increase in fares of about 15 cents. That will bring them up to 175. Most of our other localities are probably already solidly at 2 or above.
Yeah.
And so,
why don't you just jump straight there?
You know, that might be part of the conversation. We'll see.
I can address part of
that. Yeah, you can respond.
And so, you know, that means our monthly pass is going to go up about $5. A couple of the newer programs that are going to be tested out this year, looking at a lower off-peak program, specifically off-peak fares for seniors. These aren't from talking to the city manager, the focus is going to be on seniors that are just trying to get to certain appointments, things like that, not necessarily seniors that are in the workforce. By making it off peak and seeing if there's an opportunity to better partner with the senior community, we hopefully have a better mechanism for travel for those individuals. And then looking to expand the free rides. We did free rides this past year to TC Williams High School students, and that was from what we hear or what we've heard, that was a success. And so we're going to probably expand that to the other high schools. We're not sure what that necessarily gets us. You know, that's not another, we're not adding specifically another TC or TC size amount of kids that might travel the city during the mornings and afternoons, but we think it's fair part. In part fairness to offer that to all the other city high schools or high schools in the city that might not be public. Those were a couple things that he highlighted. As we reach, and I think we are going to be talking about, where are we? It's going to be on March 21st is when we're going to start talking about transportation for livable, green, and prospering city. That's when we're going to have our kind of conversation with department heads, Jan and others, to discuss not only kind of the operating budget for this year and what the specific details are and any questions that council members may have, but also start to get into the CIP that will probably pop back up during that portion, because it usually does. March 7th is when we're going to talk about the CIP overall. And so that will probably play into our conversation tonight on item number 5. Question?
Thank you. Well, now that Commissioner Schroeder has covered the Dash Bus electric pilot program, and thank you, Councilman Chapman.
I always say it was cool to ride. I didn't give very much detail.
No, actually, just to follow up on that.
Maybe stop to let me off where I was
it
going.
It was
used. You got off early.
You guys
would let us in, me and May.
Had to
go
walk
the
dog.
I was saying, we were able to make the extra trip, which we're very appreciative that you were there. Let's say it got off to a rainy start. The event that we had the Wednesday at City Hall was a rainy day, and the first day that we made the bus available to the public was at the Beatley Library. library, and when I was there, it was pouring rain on that Sunday. So I hope this is not an indication of what the future will bring us. But it was used in the pilot on all but, I believe, two routes and was able to maintain schedule, which was a concern that the battery supply would provide a sufficient amount of power in order to provide the service on and maintain the schedule, in which it was able to. And it was a very quiet bus, very spacious. So it has a lot of opportunities, and the real issue now is, would capital funds be available to alter the infrastructure at the bus facility in order to make available the right resources to then remove a diesel fleet, essentially diesel hybrid fleet, and replace it with an electric fleet, since we're very sure that it has met the first level of feasibility test of being able to make the bus right, battery packs fully functional on our system without too much downtime. But it was a very productive and valuable experience for us. But yes.
Did the electric bus run during the week?
It did. Okay. It ran all but two schedules.
I
two
saw
routes.
It on the street.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it on the weekend.
I didn't get to ride it. I got to point at it.
Yeah, there were rides available, but they were on all but two routes, if I remember correctly, in revenue service.
Yep.
And it was able to meet the schedule, which was a consideration that we had on the table.
And handle rush hour and everything
make
else.
Make sure
okay.
we were able to keep schedule, most importantly.
Did you hear feedback, too, from anybody?
In general, people thought it was nice. It smelled nice mm-hmm. and fresh. It was quiet. I haven't heard anything negative
okay.
that way or any of the other members. So, all in all, it was a success. So it's that next step. So now we know that we can do it. Now all we need to do is deal with, again, many competing resources required, and I'm sure the right decisions will be made going forward. But it is a viable option, which is the key issue. And to address the question on the fare, there was considerable discussion on the fare, and while the easy answer would be let's raise it up to $2, which is the fare everyone else generally has in the area, we do serve as a transportation mode of last resort for many people within the city of Alexandria. And for minimum wage employees, a 15-cent increase will be substantial, a 45% increase, or 45-cent increase, or something that would bring us up to the $2 point or higher, would have a very significant impact relative to our, I'll say, core ridership base. Not everyone is, say, a federal employee with a transit subsidy or has a transit subsidy through their other employment options. So it was weighed very carefully. So between some service or expense reduction initiatives and an increase in the monthly fare, monthly ticket, and an adjustment to the base fare, along with the program that the councilman referred to with a senior citizen off-peak fare, we think we're trying to maximize the revenue coming in, still providing the service for our core ridership base. So it may be an option that there's no other choice in order to meet the expenses based on the current revenues as they continue to decline nationally, not just our local area. But we are trying to come up with alternate means rather than just raise the fare to a higher level. None of these decisions are easy. And I also wanted to share with the group, I've changed employers, as I mentioned just briefly before, so I'm no longer with the National Transportation Safety Board, so I'm no longer recused from any of the transportation-related matters that I was affected with MATA, and unfortunately the NTSB had many MATA investigations or some of the other types of incidents, so that's no longer the case, and I look forward to not receiving my annual cautionary memo from our general counsel's office, so be careful you make the right decisions and do that. I'm now the executive director with the U.S. Chemical Safety Board, so if the Covanta facility has a major issue there, or if
you may
there
have to
will be
yourself.
Water treatment plant down by Eisenhower has a undesired outcome, I may have to separate myself there, but I don't think it's primarily a transportation issue. So it's all good. Now that I'm worried about mayhem and destruction on fixed facilities, not moving facilities. But it eliminates this recusal issue that I had on certain matters. So that's all I have for the commission update. So if we can move to item 5, please.
Okay.
Councilman Chapman covered a lot of what I'm going to talk about tonight, so maybe that's going to be surprises. But just to quickly go over the budget development process, departments submitted their capital project requests back in September, and then the Transportation Commission provided budget guidance in the fall. The Capital Improvement Program, which the CIP, the Steering Committee recommends their makes their recommendations to the city manager in the winter, and then the city manager takes all of that input and works in January and February to propose the final CIP and budget, operating budget, which was presented to City Council last night. So just some really high-level elements of the budget. This year we started initiating the beginning steps of priority-based budgeting so that in future budgets we can kind of add on to that process a little bit more. As always, focusing on right-sizing our department budgets, continuing high level of capital investments, like Councilman mentioned, implementing Vision Zero was part of the city manager, our council's budget guidance to the city manager this year, and then improving the King Street retail corridor and funds for that was also an element of this process. So very high level, we don't need to get into
what does that mean, improving the King Street retail corridor?
So because because we did not move forward with the bid, it was focusing on how are we going to make sure that we are maintaining the King Street retail corridor in terms of our maintenance and brick sidewalks and trash collection and a couple other elements of that, which I think they listed in the, I provided some of the higher level transportation and environmental service fiscal year highlights to you all. So I think it's this might be the operating side of it, but it provides a little bit more money for our maintenance operations on the King Street corridor. So you all can take a really deep dive into the budget this weekend. I'm sure that's on the top of your list. But you know, I think some of the highlights. The city schools, city manager funded 100% of their budget. The city schools budget represents about 70% of the revenue that we receive in the city. City government operations are 7%, and then transit services. So this is the WMATA portion that Alan will get into more detail on.
This is operating costs.
Yes, it's operating cost.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Wow. Some of the revenue highlights for the city. So there was no change this year in the personal property tax rates, no increase in stormwater rates, no increase in the residential refuse rate. The real estate tax, the residential assessments did go up by about 3.3%. And then there was the $25 per household increase in the sanitary sewer rate. And that's for funds to go toward the CSO project. Mm-hmm. Okay. So some of the highlights for the CIP for transportation and transit. There was in non-motorized transportation went up a little bit, 5%. Our fixed transportation equipment, $24 million this year. So, I mean, basically, this is very high level. If you want to see, I printed out for you all more details if you want to kind of look at the specific projects. But the transportation total was $600 million. So there's a lot of funding in this, in the CIP for transportation and transit. So some of the big highlights and additions this year, as Councilman Chapman mentioned, had to do with Vision Zero. So the 6 police officers for traffic safety, a lot of the Vision Zero action items were for increased enforcement efforts throughout the city. So the police officers would help with that. The operating budget increased by $100,000 in FY19 to expand. This is the educational efforts as well as additional data collection, which were 2 key components of the action plan items. There was an additional $375,000 in the complete street CIP. This is for Vision Zero implementation for FY19. FY20 and 21 also proposed an additional $300,000 in complete streets in the CIP. And then, and additionally, so in FY20, there was also funding added to the sidewalk capital maintenance as part of Vision Zero, making sure our streets are safe and walkable. So that that CIP project, they were getting $600,000 one year, and then $300,000 the next, and then $600,000 the next. And so what this did is it kind of brought it up to level it out year to year. So before I turn over to Alan to talk about transit, do you all have any questions about the Vision Zero funds?
Was this what you expected?
Yes. Yeah. So we there's still funding in the FY18 budget. So we've been able to start spending the spring kind of ramping up on Vision Zero and spending that money to really get started. And you know, we think with this funding, on top of all the complete streets funding that we have, we're able to wrap Vision Zero into a lot of the existing complete streets programs. So this additional funding will be really helpful, and especially getting a lot of the low-hanging fruit. Some of that stuff is the engineering items are not as costly, so it might not seem like a lot of funding. But as we're figuring out the process for identifying which locations we're going to choose, what are the types of improvements we're going to implement, we think this is a nice chunk of funds to get there. One of the kind of larger elements of the 375 is really looking at least one of our high crash locations and starting to do some serious design on one of the intersections that came out as a high crash location for the city.
I was going to say, it's really great to see kind of the additional funds for data collection. I was just wondering if you could talk a little bit about kind of the evaluation plan and sort of other key milestones at which you'll be checking in on the success of these different efforts.
Yes, there are. And we have a very detailed action work plan online that has milestones. We will come back with a report, an annual report, each year after we have the full data for that year. So we'll be implementing, I think the first report would be in 2019. So we take 2018 to kind of kick off Vision Zero. We'll get that data in the spring of 2019, and then we'll start our first annual report. So that data collection is going to be really helpful in evaluating and monitoring some of the items that we're implementing early on to see where are we getting the, you know, the biggest bang for our buck, what items are infrastructure improvements are successful, which corridors are we seeing declines and crashes, and then also collecting some additional, you know, before and after data and going back and getting more after data on some of the projects that we've already installed so we can see what's working well.
And I'll just draw your attention to, in our work plan, staff has provided for some quarterly updates. So we'll hear from staff even before we get to the full annual report. It might not be as data heavy. It might be more just sort of progress with implementing different pieces of the program, but we'll have those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. We're looking to have something next month now, as we talked about that.
It's right in the work plan.
Yeah, so right now, there isn't a marker for March, but yeah, I mean, there would be roughly a March one, and then there's one marked for June and one marked for September.
I was going to ask, like, this slide here, it'd be great to see what else you have in the complete streets bucket.
To see
what projects are going on, complete streets and whatever, something that is in this as well.
So that's also in the budget document. Okay. Under the complete street CIP, okay. There's a list of projects for that as well.
Yeah, so it looks like the total proposed is 1.54 million, right, yeah. For complete streets for FY19. But that's just what's on the summary.
And that's a substantial increase from the 830 that we received this year.
I had another question. Oh, can you remind me, because I know we've had some staff changes throughout the course of the Vision Zero process, and I also recognize that Vision Zero is sort of an interdisciplinary endeavor. Can you describe a little bit how it's shaking out as far as staff responsibilities, the names of the people that are assigned, and what kinds of roles they're going to take in implementation?
Yes. So Chris's team is almost fully staffed up now. We had a complete streets coordinator, Christine Mayer. She came on. She and the pedestrian and bicycle program manager, complete streets program manager, both came on board at the end of January. His name is Darren Buck. So between those two positions, Darren will be kind of the management of the different programs. He'll be managing Capital Bike Share, the complete streets program, high level kind of Vision Zero, policy and process. Christina, I believe, will be the main point person for Vision Zero implementation. She was also our main project manager consultant on the Vision Zero plan.
Okay.
So so she's really familiar already.
From Inspire Green?
From Inspire Green, yeah. So she's very familiar with the plan, which is great. She's able to kind of dive right in. So they are working together right now to kind of look at the priority action items and the year one engineering items and figure out, okay, where are we going to implement these? You know, what are the specific locations and what's the timing for making sure we get all those improvements done in this first year?
Are there any staff sort of, maybe frontline is kind of the right term, but outside of Chris's team, outside of sort of transportation and transportation planning, that are the points of contact that cross over into other groups?
In terms of, I mean, we had an interdepartmental team.
Yep.
The Vision Zero work plan that's online, that has a column hidden, but we have points of contact for every single action items, and it spreads across the city. Mm-hmm. So if there's a specific action item that is of interest, we can point you to the yeah. person that is Great. Managing that item. Mm-hmm.
Accountability is terrific.
Yes.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions before we move on to the next part? Thank you. Alan?
All right, good evening, everybody. So I wanted to give you a quick overview of some of the changes that are coming in the transit world. So one of the first things I'm going to talk through is some of the changes that you're going to see in the new CIP. This is a pretty high level overview of them, but these are the ones that we think are really important to point out. The first one is the DASH facility expansion. Last year, DASH and the city were awarded $11.1 million to expand the facility. That's a physical expansion, including the purchase of, I believe, 6 or 8 buses. So that's funding is going to start flowing in FY19 to spread out over several years. So that was a really big win for the city last year. DASH technology, we've invested some additional CMAQ dollars into DASH so they can roll out some more projects to support real-time bus and automatic vehicle location, automatic announcers. Some internal software that they have to manage their fleet within the building. We're moving towards a system that will allow basically similar to what WMATA has, you text the bus stop number and it texts you back, kind of to get at folks that may not have a smartphone. We're trying to broaden the options for folks that are out there using the system. Battery packs, you'll see in FY20 actually, and a little bit of an increase this year. Basically, we're trying to get them back to a state of good repair with their battery packs. Bus replacement, we're moving pretty much on schedule to keep up with getting them towards a state of good repair. Chairman Kleiss mentioned a little bit about some of the efforts that are going on there. There has been a discussion about electrification, and I know that's come up in a couple different places with the EPC and other things. So there is actually a line item in there right now in the new CIP that says dash bus fleet replacement, fleet electrification. There's no funding with it yet. I think we're still a little bit early. I'm trying to figure out what exactly that course is forward, and we're working closely with the energy manager of the city and DASH, General Services, and TNES to figure out how to map that progress and that transition forward. King Street Metro, one of our projects is moving forward right now. We added some additional state funding we transferred in to shore up the funding for that project. Hopefully we'll have some big announcements coming this spring. Knock on wood. And West End Transitway, we updated some of the funding estimates, and one of the, sorry,
yeah. What are the King Street improvements?
So King Street improvements are the parking area right out in front of it and the bus bays that are there today. Basically, we're wiping the slate clean and completely rebuilding the entire area. We'll be making pedestrian improvements and safety improvements, increasing the number of bus stops there. Doing some landscaping and some streetscaping through there, and then reallocating the space that's dedicated for taxis and car share, and bike parking.
What's the pedestrian improvements? I mean, like, is it like a quarter mile, half a mile?
Oh, it's just within that location, within the immediate place. But if you look at the way it is now, you have to cross over the bus lanes, and then there's this giant asphalt of random cars parking and pulling and queuing in different places. So basically, there'll be a little bit cleaner and a more direct path and a more visible path of where pedestrian realm is, with the crosswalks going from the station across the first set of bus lanes. Over to the next, there's going to be two layers of bus stops. So basically moving through that and then moving over towards Diagonal Road. So basically an improvement in that, just to kind of get rid of some of that randomness.
Yeah, the current configuration is not friendly to buses moving through the King Street facility and pedestrians trying to access. It's an industrial engineer's nightmare, just watching people not moving or moving and the buses don't move. And sometimes there's four or five buses queuing up as I wait for the number 8, which I take going there. This should significantly help. We'll fix everything, but it should significantly help the routing. And it's going to make it a more traditional bus terminal arrangement, a little bit akin to what we have at Braddock and some of the other facilities.
Refresh my memory. With these improvements, did we have any improved connections to the Amtrak station? I know there was discussion about that, but I can't remember if that was included.
Not with this project. That doesn't come. VRE is actually advancing a project right now to build that tunnel connection from Union Station over, but that's managed by VRE, but that is slowly moving forward as well. I don't know if you're involved in that, but...
No, I'm not.
No. Okay.
it involves CSX. I'll just leave it at that.
Yes.
So you're not too much different than Norfolk Southern Council.
Exactly. So the last project is the West End Transitway. We updated the funding estimates for that, and as we've said along the way, as we got further and further along with this project, is we might have to consider kind of phasing it, and that's what this has done. Basically, we're approaching it based on focusing on the northern segment, which is Landmark Mall up to the Pentagon. That's the section that makes the most sense. That's where the most riders are today. That's where the big employers are. You've got Mark Center and the Pentagon along there. You have major transit facilities in the Mark Center Transit Center. Shirlington and the Pentagon are all major ones. So the northern segment made sense to start first. And in order to move this forward, in December, we apply to the MBTA for $60 million to support this first phase. We talked a little bit about DASH changes, proposed changes. The next one is some of the I kind of wanted to give an overview of like some of what the investments are that the city is making in transit. It is a pretty significant chunk of money. The numbers right there add up to $88.5 million, a little bit over $88 million. So it is a significant investment that we make in Metro and in Dash. If you look at the CIP, the amount of money that we spend replacing buses is pretty significant each year. This year alone, for Dash, we're spending over $4 million buying new buses and battery packs. 4.2 up there, the operating subsidy, that's subject to change depending on the budget, of course. And then the WMATA asks are pretty significant as well. The operating cost funds not just Metro Rail and Metro Bus, but Metro Access, the paratransit program. The capital ask is a little under $30 million. But I wanted to also add VRE and NVTC, because there are two really important elements. VRE, we benefit significantly from having a station here in the city, and NVTC is the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission. They're basically Northern Virginia's voice for transit when you look at it at the regional level. We work with them on a regular basis. We have representation with Councilman Smedberger and Councilman Levine on that commission. They deal with transit issues related to Northern Virginia with Metro. They're a co-owner of VRE. So I think what they do and the lobbying work that they do and the policy work and research they do is very beneficial to us, and they help us represent, you know, the needs of transit providers to the General Assembly as currently going on right now. So they're an invaluable resource that we engage with regularly.
So what do those numbers mean under those two, VRE and NVTC?
Those are the annual subsidies that we pay to support their operating costs. Basically, VRE, we pay, this year's is estimated $145,000 that goes towards their operating subsidy. Same thing with MVTC, that's like their staff. Basically.
Wait, we subsidize VRE service?
Yes.
Really? Mm-hmm. I guess I didn't realize that. And MVTC, that's like a membership dues payment?
Kind of. It's proportional based on like the, I think it's proportional based on the population of the members of the member jurisdictions, correct. So,
okay.
Yes. We work with them, like I said, a lot. And we get a lot for that money, and the yeah. research and the advocacy and the work we do with them is we get a lot. So, just want to give you a quick high-level overview, since we're kind of talking on WMATA, and there's something going on down in Richmond right now, and there's some folks down there meeting, and one of the big things they're talking about is Metro funding. Right now, we've made it about halfway through the General, a little bit more than halfway through the General Assembly session for this year. And these are basically the last two transit funding bills that were left standing when it came to crossover. So there's a Senate Bill 856 and a House Bill 1539. So if you read enough of the newspaper and Washington Post, you'll see these numbers a lot. Get several emails a day from MVTC actually actively down there engaging elected officials, you know, on Northern Virginia's behalf. But these are the two bills that are basically trying to address the concerns that we have about dedicated funding when it comes to Metro. So a quick overview, you'll pretty quickly see the difference between the two. The Senate bill starts out with basically providing $154 million a year. That's the number that the WMATA general manager has requested from Virginia in order to provide dedicated funding. The House bill is $105 million a year. The next one is dedicated funding for VRE. That's been something that the Northern Virginia has been pushing for a long time. The Senate bill provides for that. The House bill does not. On the House bill, when you look at new revenue sources, there are no new revenue sources. So basically, the House bill looks at moving around existing sources and reprioritizing.
Taking money we're using somewhere else.
It's a shift around game, correct? The Senate bill does provide new revenue sources. There's lots of different options that have floated out there. TOT increase tax, and also grantors tax are just two of them that are floated out there.
It also installs a gas tax floor, which is pretty important. It's basically with the price several years ago when it was put in, it was generating a certain amount of revenue. When the price of fuel dropped, the amount of revenue drops with it. At the state level, there's a floor. It can never drop below a certain level. Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads have a regional tax and does not have a floor, so it can drop below that a certain level. So installing that floor gives you a little bit more stability of this is the base, you can't go below this. So that gives a little more predictability over the years when you're trying to program out funding. The House bill does not impose a gas tax floor. 30% funds, just to give a little quick background of what those are NVTA, the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority, collects funds in their district, and of all the funds and revenue they collect, 30% is basically local funds that go directly back to the jurisdiction based on how much revenue you generated. 70% of the funds go into a giant pot that are competitive funds that we compete for with all the other jurisdictions. When I mentioned the West End Transway before, the MBTA 70% funds, that's the same thing. So these 30% funds, part of the plan that's coming from Richmond is taking some of those funds, which we use right now mainly to purchase buses and to support our subsidy with WMATA, and dedicating it to WMATA. So what it does is it has an impact on how we can program that, because it carves out a chunk of those that have to go to WMATA, and we lose right. some of that flexibility.
Whereas today you could use the 30% funds entirely not for WMATA,
correct.
If you had another source mm-hmm. to fund WMATA.
Correct. Yeah, each jurisdiction uses them slightly different. Arlington doesn't use them for WMATA at all. We use it partially for WMATA capital and operating. So the impact is different for each person. For each jurisdiction, but each of them have an impact of the 30% funds. The House bill is significantly higher. I think off the top of my head, if I remember, in the Senate bill, basically all the jurisdictions that are in MBTA, it carves out $30 million, of which we're a portion of that. We're 16%, I believe. And then in the Hugo bill, it's 16% of $45 million. So it's a significantly bigger impact on our 30% plan. If you look in the budget document, you'll see the 30% program and see what it funds, and that's the line items that would be impacted. So where things stand now is these two bills are in Richmond, and they'll be in conference and budget conference for the next couple weeks, and then we'll see what the outcomes are and what the proposal is that comes out of it. You've got what was asked for, which would be ideal and solves a lot of problems, and you've also got one that kind of maybe starts to get at it. So where we end up between that spectrum is going to be very important of how WMATA is able to keep moving forward on their capital side, how much they're able to accomplish, and ultimately how big their CIP each year can be. So I just wanted to give a quick high-level overview of it's a lot to take in. I get that, but it's kind of where we stand. I think generally speaking, we're generally more supportive of the Senate bill. It meets a little bit more of what we've been advocating, what other jurisdictions have been advocating, what MVTC has been advocating for.
Who are the advocates? Like, it sounds like the Senate bill is better. I mean, it's better for Northern Virginia because we're up here and we need Metro to be supported, and it's less detrimental to our 30% funds, which we need for other things potentially. What's the reason why the House bill is so much less effective?
There are political parties that are different political parties that are sponsoring different bills. The House bill is very much resistant to new revenue, resistant to new taxing. The other bill, basically the Senate bill, is much more open and amenable to it, and recognizing that the existing funding sources that are there today aren't sufficient, and options are needed for Northern Virginia to be able to fund these, to be able to fund WMATA moving forward.
Any other questions for Alan?
That was a fire hydrant of information.
Thank you for the presentation. Okay. All right. With no other questions, we'll move on to item six, the departmental LRP.
And last but not least, I will be presenting on this item. And item number six relates to the FY19 interdepartmental long-range plan that the city has been working on. Last meeting, we provided you with a written update about projects that the city is considering in their interdepartmental long-range plan work program. And I'll give you a description of what the objectives of the work program are, basically to prepare the city for changes in land use, in transportation technology, and to also align city's activities with their plans and programs so that they're basically aligned. The interdepartmental long-range plan work program is based on a very simple ideal, which is improving quality of life from a social, economic, and environmental sustainability, affordable housing, and efficiency. So some of the priorities within this interdepartmental long-range plan are land use, transportation, mobility, accessibility, and sustainability, housing, and open space. So just to give you a quick rundown of what the activities have that the city has taken, last October, different departments within the city have been working together to put, you know, a comprehensive list of programs and projects and policies that will ultimately be approved for the work program. And in November, the city conducted some community outreach activities. Then during January and February, we have been reaching out to different commissions, as it is the case with the Transportation Commission. Then in March, the city will be finalizing a version of the program, of the work program, and finally in May, we anticipate to have a final endorsement and an approval of the plan. Just to give you some ideas of kind of like the different components of this work program, we can see there's land use, transportation, sustainability, housing, and open space, which are the priorities of the program. And then I highlighted some of the transportation components of it, the transportation master plan update, the transit vision study that Alan's team is conducting, the EAP update, environmental action plan update that is going on, and many others. So we wanted to give you a little, we wanted to highlight some of these projects given their transportation of mobility accessibility components. The Alexander Transit Vision study I already mentioned. Basically, that study, as you probably already know, is to understand how the city could reorganize public transit lines and services. Then we have the Intelligent Transportation System, or ITS program, some of the Complete Streets program. I'm going to try to see if we can fix that. Oh, here we go. The Landmark Mall replanning, basically, as many of you know, the developer came back a couple months ago and is interested to redeveloping the site. There was an approval done in 2015, and so they're looking to get a redevelopment plan soon. So now that they acquired the Macy's, a parcel or site, the transportation master plan, as you already know, and we had this conversation in January, we are updating the streets, the parking, and curbside management in ITS chapters, the technology. The environmental action plan, already mentioned it, green building policy updates, the Central Alexandra traffic study, which is concluding pretty soon, the residential parking permit districts and meter location, and also another one that I should mention is the Route 1 South affordable housing strategy that, although it is a housing project, affordable housing project, it has some components that have to do with accessibility and mobility and safety around the southeast quadrant.
So the Central Alexandria traffic study item is not the study, which will have been complete by FY19, but it's like the follow-on implementation of it?
So this work program takes into consideration projects and policies that are ongoing in FY18,
mm-hmm.
and that will, you know, be finalized within calendar year 18, or that will continue throughout calendar year 19.
Okay.
So it's both. And just to highlight some quick next steps, and on February 13, it went to City Council discussion. Like I said, March and April, the staff will continue coordination to develop a final plan, work program. And in May, we are seeking a final endorsement and approval. And with that, I conclude the presentation. I don't know if there's any questions from staff, from the commissioners. You also have, in the memorandum for this item, you have a description of each project.
Mm-hmm. Regarding the Central Alexandria traffic study, that's ongoing right now. Is that correct?
That is correct. It has not.
When do you anticipate it being completed and results being available?
So there's a meeting tomorrow night, actually, and at that meeting, staff will present short, medium, and long-term recommendations to the group, so it's pretty close to being complete. The actual study portion of it, the data has been collected, the study has been complete. At the meeting tomorrow night, staff will present, we looked at some different scenarios of, and put those into the traffic model, so we'll talk about those with the task force. So some of the short-term improvements would be implemented within the year, and then there's medium and long-term recommendations as well.
Is that something, I just don't feel very familiar with it. I haven't been to the task force meetings. Is that something that the Transportation Commission would see the results of, like the final, whatever the final report is, or the finalized recommendations that come out of the task force?
Sure, and it's probably going to be a memo.
Mm-hmm.
To council with recommendations. We are looking at doing a work session, combining it with a transit corridor work session in April for council. We wanted to wait till after this meeting tomorrow to see what the task force, what their comments are on the recommendations,
yep.
And that'll kind of inform what the final deliverable looks like. Is it a memo? Is it a presentation?
Right.
What that needs to be.
Yeah.
So we can certainly provide that to you all as well, and we'll provide an update.
That would be great.
We could look at doing an update at one of the Transportation Commission meetings.
Yeah, I mean, March would be nice. I mean, if there's any way, to the extent that we can hear it and reflect on it or give you any final feedback before you're finalizing your material for council, that would be ideal. I mean, in a sense, we don't necessarily have like say in or control over that staff product, mm-hmm. and for that particular purpose, but it is this is another public forum, and it's a way, mm-hmm. for if there's anyone who's been involved in that process who wants another chance to talk to you in a more formal way, mm-hmm. about their feelings about the results or the final recommendations, because usually not everyone is 100% happy with what's
you know, what's being proposed moving forward. We give them that opportunity to talk about it. So I think there are a couple of different ways that that could be valuable.
Sure.
It could be fitted in March.
Yeah, I'll talk to Amir about scheduling. And once we get through tomorrow night, we'll have a better idea. Some of the task force members represent their civic associations. So it's four civic associations that each have members on the task force. So some of those are members are going to want to take the, you know, what we discussed at the meeting back to their association. So the timing just kind of, you know,
yeah,
we can factor that in, but we can certainly bring it to you all at some point as well. So we'll add that to the work plan.
Would March be a realistic date?
Let me get through tomorrow and find out when their meetings are, because some of them have just had meetings, so they won't have had a meeting until after March, and so we might want to let them bring it to their associations first. So we'll work on it and we'll figure out something that works for everybody.
That'd be helpful.
Are you expecting a fun meeting tomorrow night? Is it,
yeah, absolutely. They're all really fun. Yeah.
It sounds like
it. I actually really enjoy them. It'll be fun.
They also have a website that they
update
every week.
Yeah, there's the past presentations are on there, kind of what we've talked about, and there's meeting summaries as well of, you know, highlights of the discussions.
I had a comment.
I know you can see. I don't think you can see that side of the table.
I've had one turn, so.
I was thinking about maybe going this way, but.
I just had a quick comment. It was last week or the week before. I went to the Homes Run Park Committee meeting in my neighborhood, where Councilwoman Del Pepper was there, and she's actually talking about Landmark, and she said something about how Sears had entered into an agreement, or went, or actually in serious discussions with Howard Hughes, to give Howard Hughes control of their land in exchange for like some recurring revenue off the mall. You know, so like this would actually allow the redevelopment of the site now.
So I can talk a little bit about that, and that, you know, I would caution saying that we're moving quickly, or they're moving quickly. Who knows how fast they want to move, but they have acquired the Macy's site. I think folks have heard about what's going to be happening there as that site transitions. One of the newer pieces to the puzzle is the Sears site. And Sears as a company, and this is all kind of public knowledge, has been going through their challenges. And so they've reorganized part of their corporation to be basically a real estate holding company. And that undergirds a number of its locations throughout the U.S. And so they've been working out deals with developers in other communities as well as local government to kind of sell off or do other things with those properties. That hasn't quite circled to us just yet. Those initial conversations are starting to happen. And while they actually have not settled on what they're going to do, you know, what Del talked about is certainly an opportunity for something to happen. So we do believe that Howard Hughes is going to is working now to acquire the Sears site, which would then allow us, or frankly Howard Hughes, to kind of move full steam with redeveloping the whole site, which really allows us to take another look at how that site is laid out, how transit is incorporated into the site. And so I think, you know, what the city's hopeful for is their acquiring of the full site really allows us to do a much better job at the planning of Landmark. And so they've started some of those initial conversations with the city, and the planning that they're coming to the table with doesn't actually include Sears yet, because that's not finalized. But it does leave the door open to what happens on that site. So it's the timing of it is kind of interesting. I think we're hoping that we see some significant completion of any type of deal this year. That way, the planning that staff does in terms of replanning Landmark is not kind of in vain. But there is some activity there. We're hopeful that it really amounts to real movement forward. But as all of us have watched this ongoing cycle and saga with Landmark, we keep our fingers and toes crossed for a positive outcome.
Commissioner Gaskins?
I was just curious, the reference to community outreach, does that refer to the overall long-range plan work, or is that sort of referencing the individual community outreach plans or initiatives that go on for each of the things you presented on?
It's for the whole work plan.
Commissioner Schroeder?
I was just pointing that side because you're moving forward, and I just saw two hands go up.
Okay. Thank you for being observant. All right.
I'm good.
Any other questions for staff on item 6, the departmental long-range plan? Okay. Do we have any other business to deal with? Yes,
so Councilman Chapman brings up a good point that the night of the next meeting, March 21st, is also the budget work session on transportation's budget. So I wanted to bring up the question of if the commissioners would like to move the meeting maybe to the next day, to Thursday, March 22nd, and that way this meeting is more reflected.
That's the joint PCEPC mm-hmm. work session.
Okay.
Planning and
so,
thank
that's
you.
Right. I'll be there. All right. Yeah, that's not on here. Okay.
So, how about a week forward or a week back?
Yeah, I was going to say.
Or you can move it maybe to Tuesday.
Tuesday, City Council.
Oh,
City Council,
Can we move it by a week?
The week before, the a week earlier?
Wednesday the 28th.
Let's see. Wednesday the 14th, there's a budget work session.
Yeah. Is the 28th a possibility?
A lot of those things are right.
There'll never be any completely free conflict.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it looks
28
like
28? How does everybody feel about that?
I'm good.
The 28th it is?
Alright.
Now the big question is, do I go to the traffic study or the budget tomorrow?
We'll let you make that call. Okay, so everyone can support a March 28th meeting, same time start? Okay.
Yeah, we'll determine.
Okay. And do we know if this location will still be good?
We'll look into that.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll determine that.
Okay. Any other business? Do you have a motion to adjourn?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thank you much for everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Do you want me to ride on?
Please. That would be great. Well, thank you.
He was in camera station. I live right here. So.
Can I, like, bum ride?
Oh, of course, yeah, of course.
Good morning, where are you at?
See, I'm on Conversations Boulevard.
I'm so proud of you,
Oh, yeah, I've been trying to see you.
I'm on wait for you.
I am right in between Nap and...
Okay, a little further down.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
I didn't realize you had a heavy representation on the West End now.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. Sort of, you know. Christine left.
Sorry.
Aaliyah.
How are you doing?
Oh, of course. Good.
Yeah, it was a lot of stickers on.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I've got my standard people at bum rides from the Planning Commission because, like, three other commissioners, Nate, Maria, Stephen Koenig, they all live, like, in Rose Pond, just past my house, so I have to go, have to go buy my place really anyway.
I'll let you shift this one off and do the official act.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.